is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. John Sherman, and we're going to talk about his book and his pocket reference, Do-It-Yourself Natural Health. How are you, Dr. Sherman?
I'm fine. Thank you, Eva.
Please forgive me if we have phone difficulties tonight. Something's going on with my phone, so I'm on a cell phone tonight.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Anyway, so before we get started, tell us a little bit about you and your background so my listeners will know who you are, where you came from, and where they can find you.
Give you some general information. I've been a practicing therapist for about 35 years, and I'm still a per diem therapist, even though I collect my Social Security. I became inspired to begin to write some of my thoughts and my experiences about 9 years ago, and I was encouraged by members of my family. But I think also on a personal note is that many of my reflections on natural health and actually becoming more involved in taking choices for yourself and empowering yourself to do that is that I'm visually impaired. And many people don't know that, but to explain it better to listeners, I actually see about 10% up out of my left eye and less than 5% out of my right. But I think going through the process of becoming comfortable with myself and my capabilities actually began to empower myself to make better decisions for myself and not have to rely upon others to do that. That brought me an enormous peace of mind, and I think a reality that has really helped me to step forward and be a more helpful and real person.
Is this something you were born with, or did it just happen?
I was actually a high-risk infant, and although I'm the middle child, I'm the only cesarean birth. When I was born in Boston, which happened to be in the midst of the Second World War, the birthing process became very difficult, and I actually was a result of what they call agnosia, which is just a lack of oxygen. So although I knew I had visual difficulties, I actually was never even declared legally blind until I was 20 years old, and that's an interesting story in itself. Mm-hmm. But it has been since birth, and of course, as we get older, sometimes our vision tends to diminish somewhat. But in my case, it's, well, you know, if you have 10% and it drops to 9.5%, that's not really a terribly big drop off for anybody. So, but I do have full field of vision, and I do have color ability. I do paint, and I draw, and I use oils and watercolors.
Interesting.
And my wife gets a little bit scared when I pick out color patterns, but basically I have a lot of the functional skills that somebody who might be full vision, but I just don't have the acuity which the average person does have.
Then what is your PhD in?
PhD is in health and human services. It's a psychology degree. And my dissertation was actually on the fear of falling, which was a comparative study with elderly who had sustained falls and either had recuperated very quickly or had actually maybe fractured a hip or had back injury. But it was the follow through with analyzing what's involved with our sense of balance and coordination, and then comparing the studies and then actually interjecting some of my own experiences as to elements I thought that they left out, such as the psychological factor or the emotional or the lack of concentration or loss of focus mentally and emotionally, which happened to also contribute to the falls too. But my job has basically been, I think, to share with people some of the most natural ways of staying well or getting well, and that is through, I think, you know, some of the very common natural therapies that are used today around the world. I'm just trying to encourage people to empower themselves to make better healthcare decisions and not rely upon advertisements on television or newspapers or testimonials which really don't have a lot of substance to them, but by watching them over and over again, they tend to think, oh, that must improve the quality of the product. In fact, it doesn't.
What do you think about our healthcare system?
I think we're broken. I think one of the problems that we have is that people oftentimes keep asking, you know, are our governors, our senators, our representatives, the president or his cabinet or the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare to fix our problems. And I think what we're realizing is that they're not fixing our problems. We have too many lobbyists, we have too much money, too many conflicting issues with our representatives in Washington or even in the state, wherever we're located, that interfere with, you know, good quality health. This is why I think if people are at least empowering themselves to make better healthcare decisions for themselves, and I talk about the least invasive procedure first. Now, if it's a life and death situation, they can go to a hospital or they'll need emergency care. But if it happens to be just a headache or upset stomach or some nausea or leg cramps, these are things that can be, I believe, addressed just as easily using natural therapies. Natural therapies basically cost very little, if not free. And yet we've tended to bypass those because we've become inundated with products from over-the-counter or even prescription medications that doctors are, for some reason, more willing to write than ever.
Well, while we're talking, before we really get started about what you do, I just have to share this with my audience. A friend of mine sent me, is Mark Naveau. He used to be the CEO of the National Foundation of Alternative Medicines. And he sent me an email today, and it was a letter that somebody had written to the Attorney General of the United States, and a letter that he wrote back that they're about to, somebody encouraging him to crack down on energy medicine and frequency devices and blood zappers and all those things that naturopaths use as bogus energy medicine machines. So I just want to tell everybody, you know, to be careful and to look into that right now because it's about to start happening. I've been expecting it for a while, but I hate to see it coming. Do you know what I'm talking about, those machines?
Well, I do, and I think one of the issues that we look at today is, you know, in general, if we find something threatening the status quo, then that's going to automatically evoke a response. The problem with natural health is because there are few regulations on it, I think it's very suspect for people oftentimes to get into the market or to start even marketing products, you know, such as, you know, just apply it to your forehead. I mean, how many times have we seen this on television, and yet there's not a single issue they address as far as what they're going, what the product addresses. You know, is it a headache? Is it sinus problems?
Right.
But people have watched this over and over again, so for about $9, they'll go down and they'll spend the money for it, and now they have weak testimonials coming out. But, you know, this is for suspect. I think this is, unfortunately, one of the problems that we get into a profit-oriented or profit-motivated healthcare system. I think that if we are able to empower ourselves to make better, you know, choices ourselves by doing some investigating, and we have the internet, we have libraries, we have even, you know, people who can give quality testimonials through research, that we can make better healthcare choices for ourselves. And I think that's really the issue that I talk about when I want to see people have better health and look at some other avenues other than just going to your local pharmacy or, you know, through the drugstore to buy the over-the-counter drugs, or even going to your doctor and asking him for a prescription.
Most doctors don't even treat people to get well. They treat their symptoms. You know, the conventional medicine doctors, anyway.
Well, yes, and I can actually tell you a story that when I was working late one night, and this is not here in California, well, it is here in California, but not in the location where I am now, is that 8 o'clock at night, the physician would come in, and they would pull out the large rack of charts, about 30 charts, and he would sit there with the nurse, and he'd open the chart and say, okay, how's the patient doing? Well, the patient's fine, you know, they've eaten enough, and they've had their bowel and so forth, and he'd say, okay, we'll just continue medications. Next chart. Well, this is a man who's being paid by Medicare at that time $25 a patient. Well, he never saw the patient, and he only did this once a month. He would come through the facility, going through the 30 charts, off to another facility. I mean, this is not an atypical situation. This happens to be fairly common where the doctor does not see the patient. They just go ahead and they just either rubber stamp what's going on, or if there is a condition or a problem that's arisen, yes, the doctor may go in and spend a cursory 30 seconds with them. But I think these are some of the problems that we're having with our healthcare system today.
Yes, and pharmaceuticals. The doctor writes the prescription and forgets to tell you about all the side effects that you're going to have.
Absolutely. I think this is one of the problems we have. If I want to know about a prescription, I'd rather talk to the pharmacist, who probably has better working knowledge than most doctors. Mm-hmm. The physician's inundated with so much knowledge and information today, it's difficult for one person to absorb it. But I think you'd find a specialist like a pharmacist who does know his medications, and they can sit down and they can cross-reference what you're taking. I would definitely, in my personal opinion, trust a pharmacist to tell me what the side effects are or what this drug can do versus maybe the doctor who is writing the prescription but is not even that familiar with the particular product.
Right. Well, we didn't tell people where they can look online to find you right now in case they want to look you up while we're talking. So why don't you give us your website as well?
Well, my website is DIYNaturalHealth.net or .com, either one. And it basically stands for Do-It-Yourself Natural Health. What I basically talk about is three natural therapies that are very commonly used around the world. It's nothing that's too wild or extreme, but it's basically pressure point therapy, which has been around for 5,000 years, aromatherapy, which has been around for 3,000 years since the Egyptians, and, of course, herbal therapy, which we even use today. We use common herbs like ginger and cinnamon. We use basil and thyme in our cooking and so forth, though we even grow it in our yard, lavender bush. These are the types of things I'm encouraging people to try and to use, and if they find something which happens to work well, such as lavender to soothe any stress or anxiety, these are the kinds of natural therapies I've encouraged people to use that are basically free or very inexpensive.
Well, in the beginning of your book, you talk about qi and meridians. I guess that qi or chi, people pronounce it different ways. And you talk about yin and yang, yin being feminine and yang being masculine. What does that mean exactly?
Around 5,000 years ago, the Chinese realized that by pressing on certain parts of the body, they could activate those points to help the get rid of pain, and as they found out, it basically releases the endorphins and the encaphamins, which are the natural painkillers in our brain. About 3,000 years ago, the Japanese actually said, well, let's see where these pressure points line up, and they actually found that they line up along specific lines or avenues along the body. As it turns out, many of these meridians are actually central locations of the nerves in our arms. For example, on our arm, we have three basic nerves. We have the median nerve, the ulnar nerve, and the radial nerve. And that we have pressure points that actually align along those. They actually found these out through doing electroencephalograms, and they found that these pressure points are almost identical to what the Japanese discovered 3,000 years ago.
What do you mean when you... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The yin and yang concept, I think, is just, you know, what we call our homeostasis. It's our balance of life. It happens to be the constant struggle that goes on between external and internal forces that we face, whether it's stress or whether it's pressure from outside or whether it's an ailment or condition that we're struggling with. But it's a effort to keep that energy flowing through the body and keep our sense of well-being in balance. This is what I try to talk about in the book, but it's also what I talk about as far as my own personal experiences of realizing that, you know, rather than being so influenced by outside pressures or external forces that make us angry or upset or fearful or very guilty, that we learn to keep those in balance so that we do keep our health and keep a better attitude and a better approach to dealing with ourselves, our friends, our loved ones, and even in our community.
Now, when you talk about these pressure points, that it's kind of like acupuncture, except you're using your own fingers, right?
It is. They're the same pressure points. You don't use needles, which I think anybody goes to an acupuncturist, by all means go to somebody who has been licensed, who does have some practicing experience behind them, because this is a very specifically finite practice, and it's also done with needles, which I think you want to make sure that those that's in a very sterile or a very safe environment. But the acupressure is actually done with the fingertips, and that's actually the older of the two practices. The acupressure actually allows you to press with a fingertip or your thumb on a particular area of the body in order to activate and move that neurology, get your body woken up with the energy, and also, like I said, kind of move the endorphins in the body to help alleviate some of the pain and discomfort that you might be feeling.
And people, if they wonder why this works, we're electromagnetic beings, which means we have electricity flowing through us all the time of some sort. And that we're affecting that electricity when we do this, right? In some way.
Our body is like one big community where we have electrical impulses running up and down the body at all times. In fact, if we, you know, go to physical therapy or even a chiropractor, we have electrical stimulation. That's what you're basically doing, is stimulating those nerves and nerve endings in order to move nourishment, move healing through to that part of the body that has been injured or has been damaged in order to help it heal in a more natural fashion. But that our whole body is basically an electrical impulse, and that's basically where the yin and yang concept comes in. You have energy flowing up and energy flowing down. It's basically utilizing that energy to keep us healthy. Without that electrical energy, we would have no muscle movement, because the nerves have to innervate each muscle in a body in order to make it move or contract. You have no cellular movement, so all the wastes, all the toxins collect in the body. The nervous system is actually the key that we have in our body in order to keep us healthy.
And this works for not only for pain, but it also can help heal cancers and neuralgias and myalgias and things like that, headaches and other kinds of pains, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think we can try this in almost, there are dozens of minor ailments and conditions, and I want to stress the minor part, because if we start to use a natural therapy and we don't have a positive effect, say after maybe a week or two, then I think we have to seek additional professional help. I'm certainly not advocating that we trash our whole medical process, but what I am encouraging people to do is to try some of the more of the natural therapies that have virtually no side effects, that you can administer very safely to yourself, and that you'll probably have as good, if not better, results. For example, I can show people how to get rid of their headache in about 1 minute, and people are going, oh, that's crazy, and I'll say, well, let me show you some pressure points, and I allow them to use their fingers on those pressure points to alleviate a headache that ordinarily might take anywhere from a half an hour to an hour if they take an over-the-counter medication.
Mm-hmm. So you also talk in the first part of your book about your 12 common herbs that you use. Can we talk about those? Give people a place to start?
Mm-hmm. Most of the herbs in there are actually fairly common ones. You can buy them at any health food store, and or you can even grow some in your yard. But there are ones even that you may even have around the kitchen. Like I mentioned, you may have ginger, you may have cinnamon, you may have cayenne, which is excellent for sort of, as they call, warming the blood or helping the stimulation. A lot of these are just very common. Now, I make a difference between herbal therapy and herbal medicine. This is not herbal medicine per se. If you want to have more advanced experiences with herbal medicine, I would suggest either an oriental medical doctor or a naturopathic doctor or some of the others who are skilled in that. I'm basically stressing to people that you have these products lying around the kitchen, or you can even grow in your own backyard. By all means, try those, and of course, if you have your own herbs and you pick them fresh, that's the best way to have them.
What's the difference between herbal therapy and herbal medicine?
Pardon?
What's the difference between therapy and medicine, or herbal therapy and medicine?
Usually, herbal medicine involves a licensed OMD or a licensed naturopath who may use either a particular herb or a mixture of herbs together. And it's usually done under the supervision of somebody who is also not only going to take an evaluation and an intake form with you, but also talk with you about the types of conditions that you're having. So you're actually going to be going to a doctor of sorts in order to see if they can address these problems with particular herbs, either as a what they call an herbal concoction or an herbal mixture. And once this is done, then they will usually see you maybe several times over the week, and then they may see you maybe twice a week for the next 2 weeks, and maybe once a week for the next week or so, and then you're done. And they're just making sure that the herbs that you're taking are not causing any side effects, or you're not taking them in an incorrect way. But the herbal therapy that I talk about is basically something that you can brew a pot of tea with, say, the cinnamon in order to settle an upset stomach, or peppermint, that you use the ginger. In fact, people use the ginger root, which is the therapeutic part of the ginger plant, and they actually take a couple slices of that, and they'll take it on, say, if they go on a boat ride or they are on a flight, say, across the country, where they're suspect to motion sickness. Ginger has actually been shown to be one of the best products available to alleviate motion sickness and nausea.
Interesting. Does it work just as well to use the, I don't know if this is the right word, but processed herbs, the ones that we have in our kitchen cabinets, or should you use does the natural product work better?
Well, I think
that's not been messed with.
I think if people don't have a physical space, such as a small garden area, to grow these things, I think by all means they can go to a health food store and talk to an herbologist. Usually every store that has an extensive herbal collection has an herbologist working there, and they can help you find the best herbs for you. They can show you not only different types and kinds, you can buy them either raw form, or you can buy them, you know, put together in, say, a plastic bag, or you can find them in capsules or tablets or even powders. You can buy them, but I think the best thing to do, to me, is if you're going to grow some mint, you know, why not just grow it in your backyard? Or if you're going to, if you like the smell or the scent of lavender, just put a small lavender bush in your backyard, or so when it blooms, you can go out and pick the flowers and actually rub your hands together. And as you inhale it, that's a very calming and relaxing feeling.
Can you take herbal supplements with your pharmaceuticals for people, let's say, on high blood pressure or, high cholesterol, things like that?
I have taken several herbal courses, but I'm not a licensed herbologist. I would probably say that most of my experience with herbs has been with you know, attending lectures and also going out in some of the field trips and collecting them, but also sitting down and learning in class, you know, which herbs have been found to be most effective for addressing particular problems that we might experience. The credentials, I think, for an herbologist are very impressive, and I think people who go ahead and become credentialed in herbology are people who can probably speak a little bit more knowledgeable than me. I sort of offer some of the basic generic things that are easy for people to find and to use, and then if they'd like to become more sophisticated in it, there's some excellent courses. For example, the American Botanical Council in Texas offers an online course, I think for about $60, that teaches you the basic fundamentals of herbology. So you can actually do an online course, or you can check your community paper or the phone book, because there are oftentimes some basic herbology courses that are available on a weekend or even maybe one night a week for, say, a 4 or 6 weeks. They can teach you some of the fundamentals about herbology. But my intent is basically to encourage people to empower themselves to try some of these things. So instead of going and buying, say, a bottle of, an antacid at a store, which may cost $5 or $6, is to maybe try some peppermint tea or try some ginger. Try some of the natural herbs, which costs much less and probably work just as well.
Well, I tell you, so many people think because it's natural that it doesn't work very well. But I had an experience about 2 or 3 weeks. I had a negative experience, but it still shows how powerful herbs and supplements could be. I had the flu a couple of months ago, and I got some bronchitis, and so I took some golden seal and some bromelain and some Oregon grape root because I heard that makes a good natural antibiotic. Well, what I didn't know is that the golden seal could cause your blood pressure to increase. And over a period of time, it made my blood pressure jump up to like 226 over 128.
Wow.
And that's all it was the golden seal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a negative effect, but it still goes to show how powerful just an herb could be.
Yes.
It really does do something. Just because it's natural doesn't mean that it doesn't work. You know, it does do something. You just got to find the right one and do your research.
I think one of the things which I encourage people to realize is that if you're going to empower yourself to make some better health care decisions, you're also going to have to accept the responsibility of doing that. And part of it, I think, and part of it is that if you're going to try an herbal medication, or you're going to try some aromatherapy or even some pressure points, and they don't happen to work, or they don't give you the results that you expect, or if you're even having some negative side effects, then by all means, you know, stop doing that, and you can always, you know, seek some other professional advice. Basically, what I'm offering to people, I think, and it to me is, you know, trying some of these non-invasive types of herbal therapies that we talk about, like kava, and we talk about chamomile, and again, some of the other very, you know, common types of what we call herbs. And people are going to say, well, that's just, you know, tea. And yes, it is tea, and you can brew it, and you can drink the tea itself, but it is considered part of the herbal therapy concept. And if it works for you, by all means, then stick with it. If it doesn't, or you're having side effects, or you're finding that the taste is just not compatible with yours, then by all means, you know, try some others. The argument I've had back is, well, they don't work. And I have to say, well, how many times have you gone back to the drugstore and bought an over-the-counter, you know, medication that hasn't worked? Have you gone back to the store and say, I'm sorry, I've used half a tube of this analgesic, it doesn't work, so I'll try something else? By all means, you know, try some of the pressure points. I don't know anybody who has not left one of my presentations who hasn't found at least a dozen pressure points that help to alleviate some of the common ailments that they're experiencing. And the same with aromatherapy. Some people like the smell of lavender. Some people find it very offensive. Some people prefer the smell of, say, rosemary or even a lemon balm. Try some different aromatherapies and see which one helps you to calm and to relax. And I think it helps to bring us back to a center point of we're kind of in balance. We have a sort of an inner peace about ourselves, and we also have a better outlook on the world around us.
Do you have any good success stories that you can tell us? People are always love to hear those.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Do you have any good success stories with any of your patients? People always like to hear those.
Okay. I'm sorry, Eva, I'm having trouble hearing you.
I'm sorry, it's my cell phone. Do you have any success stories that you could share with us?
I think with some of the patients that I've worked with, what I've done is basically encourage them not to go anything against what their doctor has prescribed for them. But I do encourage people, by all means, to let their doctor or the pharmacist know that you're going to be trying a natural health. Now, I think that one thing which, and it speaks to a little broader scope, is, and I can tell you about a specific patient who I had met about 4 years ago. I was asked to go see this patient for therapy. And so I walked in the room, and here's this really kind of tough, hardened lady that you might see in a bar scene, you know, who you wanted to avoid because she probably just turned around and whack you. And I walked in there, and she just snaps me going, "What do you want?" And I said, "Well, actually, I'm sort of here to see if I can do something for you. How can I help you today?" And I think right away that teddy bear inside of her sort of came out, and she said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "No, I said, I would like to know how I can help you today, because I think that you have the goal of going back home." Well, this was actually a lady who was in end stages of cancer. But she said, "Well, I keep taking this medication, this chemotherapy, and it keeps upsetting my stomach, and I don't know what to do because I keep throwing up and I'm not having difficulties." And I said, "Well," I said, "I'm not going to prescribe this for you, but I'm going to make a suggestion of why don't you try some chamomile tea. It happens to settle the stomach." She came back in the hospital about 3 months later, because the cancer had actually progressed. But she said, "You know, that was the best advice you gave me, to try some different natural therapies, because the chemotherapy was becoming so aggressive and so invasive with my body that it was making me physically ill, even though I knew that I had to continue taking it because of the invasive cancer that I was experiencing." Mm-hmm. So I think by providing some information like that to a patient, oftentimes is gratitude for me, because what she has done is empowered herself to find some ways to alleviate some of her discomfort by using a very natural therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I believe it. It works for me. I have, sometimes I can't go to sleep, and I'll put spearmint and rosemary on my pillow, and before I know it, I'm gone.
Isn't that wonderful?
Some kind of relaxing thing. Makes me feel a lot better. So, go ahead.
What I was going to say is that the thing about aromatherapy is that the first of our cranial nerves is the olfactory nerve, and of course we have others that contribute to hearing and the sense of taste. But the olfactory nerve actually goes right to the limbic system, which is the central part of the brain. It actually stores a memory. Now, a lot of us have eaten the food and said, gee, I've had that, I know that taste. I had that, let's see, a while ago, it must have been, they're sort of racking their brain to come up with an answer. Or, they hear a sound in a song and say, gee, I've heard that song before and I like the sound. I don't know who's the composer or, who's singing it. But when you have an aroma, that aroma is stored in the brain like a memory. And as soon as you smell it, your brain reacts. It doesn't even respond. It reacts to tell you exactly what it is. And if anybody has ever smelled a skunk, they will know exactly what that smell is whenever they come across it. It could be 10, 20 years down the road, but they will know exactly what that skunk smells because the brain has locked that in. That's how effective aromatherapy can be. If you smell something that is very pleasant, very pleasing to you, you will have an instant response to it. If you smell something that is very negative or uncomfortable for you or even life-threatening, the brain also tells you that too. This is the amazing part of how this limbic system works within our brain.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions about your acupressure points. Do you access different points over the body, or can you push anywhere for any problem?
There are actually several major points. I point out about 12. There are actually about 10 or 12 that are actually very valuable, and they're called major points on the body. A couple on the neck and on the hands. One on the crease of the elbow and the back, and then, three or four on the legs. But they're basically points that really activate the nervous system and help to get things healed. For example, if you take these 10 pressure points and you're just waking up in the morning, you sit. In fact, all these pressure points can basically be done while you're sitting down, and even probably easier to do it while sitting in a chair. Use these same pressure points, the 10 that I've outlined in my book, and just use the pressure point for 15 seconds. Don't forget to do the right and left side, left at the same time. And after about 2 minutes and you finish, then sit back up, and all of a sudden your body's sort of tingling. And you're going to say, well, wait a minute, I just sat up. That must be my blood pressure's dropping or whatever that's causing the... No, you've actually woken up your neurology, and you're going to find that your attention and focus is actually more in tune or in line with what you're going to be doing for the day. There are other pressure points. There are about 360 in the body, so it's very difficult to learn all of them. But just by learning a few of the basic ones are going to help you to address most of the common ailments or the common conditions you might be experiencing for the day, or just help you to raise you out of that level of tiredness or fatigue or malaise. Just get your energy back up a little bit. These pressure points can bring you back, as I said, to that level of normalcy, that nice level of balance.
And you just need to do it for 15 seconds?
Usually a pressure point, for the 10 of them, I use 15 seconds. It's almost a routine for me in the morning. I usually encourage people, if they're using a pressure point, to do it up for a minute. And then just relax and kind of just sit back and see if that headache hasn't, dropped down a bit, or the nausea hasn't decreased, or your back pain hasn't gone away a bit. And if it hasn't, then you can do it a couple more times during the day. Like I said, sometimes when you have a headache, that may be a condition that may be an indication of, unfortunately, something a little bit worse down the road. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage people that if they had not found some natural relief through using some pressure points and they really feel like their condition is worsening, then I think it's time to talk to your physician, or even if things get critical, then you may have to look at a higher level of care. But I really encourage people to try some of these and use a pressure point for about a minute. That's what I usually consider as being a good benchmark. Some people may find relief within, 10, 15 seconds. Some may, find it in a minute and a half.
Can you use, does this work on depression?
One of the things about depression is that, again, it's an abnormal condition of the body. It's an abnormal emotion. It's an abnormal, what's it called, state of mind. And again, the whole point of using pressure points is to help to raise your body and your mind and your spirit back to a normal level. For example, if you take the condition of diarrhea and constipation, they sound like they're worlds apart. But in fact, the pressure points you use for those two conditions are almost identical because they help to bring the body back to that normal state. So if you're feeling blue or you're feeling in despair or you're feeling depression, using pressure points can help to, you know, elevate your feelings to bring you back to a normal level. Now, again, if we're talking about really chronic or even severe depression, which may even be life-threatening, then I would say, you know, you'll probably need to use, you know, some more advanced medical advice, and that would probably come from your physician. But I think people who just sometimes just feel depressed or feel that things are not working out for themselves or they're just having a string of what they may call bad luck, then I would say try some pressure points, help to bring your whole body, your mind, and your spirit back to that level of normalcy, or like I call homeostasis, that level of balance, where once you have your three elements of your mind, body, and spirit in balance, the world all of a sudden becomes more manageable, and it makes things a bit brighter.
I'm curious if being hydrated affects the acupressure, the relief that you would get from it, or how well it works. Because I would imagine if you don't have enough liquid in you, that things would be pressed on top of each other. But does that make any sense? You know, the nerves and muscles and ligaments would lie closer if you're not hydrated well enough. So would that make any difference in how well it worked?
I think that it depends upon the individual. Some of these nerve endings are actually fairly superficial. For example, we talk about the median nerve and how sensitive it is. That's actually the one that travels down the palm of or your arm and through the palm of your hand. If anybody has ever had carpal tunnel syndrome, mm-hmm. or we call repetitive motion syndrome, those carpals start to pinch upon that nerve, and that is very painful. Other parts may have some, you know, dull pain or discomfort, and those nerves may be a little bit deeper into the muscle or the soft tissue of the body, which may require a little bit more pressure. But I think what we're basically looking at is finding maybe those pressure points for yourself that work the best and that seem to respond to the pressure that you're applying, so you're getting the results you want. For example, the large pressure point, and one of those powerful ones, is in the web of the hand, and I encourage people, if they start to press this, to do it very carefully, because you actually have two very powerful nerves innervating that muscle, and to gently either press it or massage it. And that's supposed to be a pressure point that'll help alleviate many of the ailments and conditions we talk about. In fact, it's probably one of the most commonly used pressure point in the whole body.
The one in between the thumb and the forefinger? Is that the one?
Yes.
And I use it for headaches, and it works really well.
It works for headache. It works for back pain. It helps to work for menstrual cramps. It helps to work with even a headache, shoulder pain. There are a variety. If you go through the book and the Do-It-Yourself Natural Health Trio or the Under Pressure book, and you look through the conditions in there, you'll see LI4 mentioned quite frequently. And it's because this particular pressure point has two of the important nerves, the ulnar and the median nerve, which actually innervate that muscle. Again, you're stimulating the nerve. You are encouraging the cells to start to flow again. You're getting the lymph and your blood moving. You're also releasing the endorphins and the enkephalins, which are the natural painkillers in the brain. And what you're doing is helping the body to heal itself. So by encouraging this, by using pressure points, it actually helps to speed up that healing process.
We've got about 5 minutes. Tell me how you've used this in your life.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Tell me how that you've used this in your own life and what success you had with it.
As far as pressure point therapy?
Any of this in your book, whether it's pressure point or aromatherapy or herbal, success stories in your own life.
I use aromatherapy frequently, and the reason I do it is that it sort of helps wake up my senses. People will probably say because you're visually impaired, your other senses are more attuned or acute to the environment that you're around. And I say, no, it just happens to be that I happen to respond well to aromatherapy. So I oftentimes, in fact, I have a candle which I burn, which has an apple cinnamon sort of flavor, and it adds a wonderful aroma to the room, and even a wonderful just feeling of just kind of peace and happiness to it. Some people like a lavender candle, some like a more mild scent, such as a lemon scent or an orange scent. But I use aromatherapy frequently. In fact, even when I find myself just becoming a little frazzled or stressed, I just take a drop or two of lavender oil, rub it in my palms, and I actually inhale that. And that helps to sort of clear myself and bring back just some mental clarity, as I call it, for the moment. Pressure points, I use them frequently. In fact, I would probably say even that I use maybe an over-the-counter medication probably 4 or 5 times a year.
You made me think about something. If you put your aromatherapy on your pressure points, would that make it any more successful?
Well, and actually what people oftentimes do is use aromatherapy to kind of what they call set the stage, so that when you use pressure point therapy or even herbal therapy, it helps to calm. It just makes the body more receptive to whatever natural treatment you're doing to it. People oftentimes use aromatherapy before they meditate or before they perform yoga or they do Tai Chi or a variety of others in order to set the stage. They will use herbal therapy, again, to settle an upset stomach or to get rid of bloating or to gas or whatever else other experiences you might have. They're going to be sort of natural before, saying going out to a movie or saying go out on a date or even, spending some special time with friends or family. It's not much fun to be out there when you have an upset stomach or you're just feeling just very kind of congested. People will use eucalyptus, before they go out, in order to help clear the sinuses and to help.
I put it on the bottom of my feet sometimes, and it makes me feel good. It kind of energy kind of feeling, the eucalyptus. Have you ever done that? Or mint, some kind of mint.
Yes, and I think, to me, I find mint, like eucalyptus, even menthol, which is a natural herb, I find those very pleasing and appealing to me. I like the coolness, and for some reason it seems those vapors seem to sort of travel upwards and help to give me that stuffy nose feeling, sort of alleviate that. Some people just do not tolerate the smell of mint at all or even the taste of it. And that's why we can use, other substitutes for that. They may happen to like hotter things such as cayenne pepper or others that, seem to help settle the stomach or help to, sort of clear, give them that clear feeling of breathing or get rid of maybe that congested type of feeling.
Tell us, we're about to have to go here, so tell the listeners one more time where they can find you. His book is Do-It-Yourself Natural Health. It's illustrated. It's a nice, good thing to keep on your desk or in your purse. You can use it wherever you go, on the MARTA train like me. So tell us where to find you again.
People can go to shop.diynaturalhealth.net, and all my products, I have even instructional CDs which go with either the Under Pressure book or the Natural Health Trio book. One CD for the Under Pressure book and two for the Natural Health, because we talk about all three therapies. But I walk people through these, and I think the important thing about looking at in all of the products that I sell are even half price. So if you go to Amazon or you go to Barnes & Noble or to Borders and you buy the book, you'll be paying full price. But I sell them for half price just because I have control on the publisher and the author.
Right.
But I think what I want people to do is, if they do buy a book, whether it's my book or anybody else's, is to use it. This is not a bookshelf book that wants to sit there and look nice when you have the spline looking out. And they go, oh, I see you have that. But no, these are books that you take and you use. You put it under your pillow or you pack it in your bag as you go on a trip, or you put it in the glove compartment of your car. You share it with your family. Don't share it too well because they may never give it back to you. But
it's a very user-friendly book, too.
Yeah, these are books to use.
And if somebody wants to contact you, what's your email address?
They can contact me. They can write to me, info@diynaturalhealth.net.
Okay. Thanks for coming on with John. I really appreciate it. I enjoy your book. It's a good thing to have around. I use it on the MARTA train all the time coming home from work. It's great.
Excellent.
So thank you and have a good evening.
Eva, thank you very much.
Good night.
Night.
Bye-bye.
Imagine a community